Richard Ben Kramer has written a short book that tries to redefine one of the great consuming problems of the past 50 years, a dispute that's cost thousands of lives and seems to recede even further from any kind of resolution. His new book is How Israel Lost, The Four Questions, in which he tries to take up some of the great vexing issues of the past two generations between Israelis, Palestinians, and much of the rest of the world. Mr. Kramer is best known for his previous bestsellers that include What It Takes, The Way to the White House, and Joe DiMaggio, The Hero's Life. But he won the Pulitzer Prize for his Middle East reporting in 1997 when he covered the region for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Mr. Kramer joins us from our studios in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scott.
Let me throw one of your first questions to you right off. Why should Americans care at all about this?
Well, you know, over the years, the Israelis have convinced us somehow that they are like us, or even more, that they are us, or standing in for us, a bulwark of democracy and Western values in the Middle East. And what sent me out to do this book was suddenly I got the feeling that maybe they aren't like us, or maybe we don't want to be like them. So that's what I went back to find out. What happened? How was it that Israel and the Palestinians were treated in moral equality by big newspapers in America or by the networks? How was it that the story of a suicide bomb would be played exactly equal to the story of what the Israeli army did in the territories?
Well, talk a bit about the differences between you when you covered the region in the late 70s and when you return now in the early part of the 21st century.
You know, if I had to sum up what I thought I knew after 7 years as a Middle East correspondent in and out of Israel 100 times, I would have called it a nice little socialist country with one problem. And the problem being, of course, its relations with the Arab world. But what I found when I went back this time was, number one, the country wasn't so little. The policies of annexation and settlement had made it a much bigger place, place of superhighways. Number two, it was no longer a socialist country. While they cast themselves as America's little buddy, mostly during the Reagan years, they changed over to a very hard-edged capitalist system. And as for the one problem, it seems to have eaten up everything. You know, the conflict, the occupation, the ongoing terror war with the Palestinians has become the not just the central preoccupation of Israel, but it has become the mission of the State of Israel. And everything about you is really about where do you stand on the conflict, hawk or dove, left wing or right wing. Mm-hmm. If you're on the other side, I don't listen to you about anything. Not just about the conflict, but about anything.
You take up in this book the question of Israel's identity as a Jewish state and the tension between secular Israelis and religious Israelis of several different...
they come in all sizes.
Maybe I could get you to instruct us in this, the buffet story.
Oh, God. You know, Israeli readers are very interesting on this book because they don't tend to argue the facts like the American Jews, who are largely unburdened by fact. But the Israelis really love this story. There was a Sabbath buffet at all the big hotels in Tel Aviv. And the way they would operate these buffets, which had to be strictly kosher, of course, was that you would come and present yourself to a hostess who would ask you milk or meat, and you would have either the milk dishes or the meat dishes and the milk glasses or the meat glasses, and everything was according to hoyle. Well, everybody was happy, and the hotels were making a ton of money, until this fellow from Cleveland, a religious tourist from Cleveland, was heard to complain that the steam from the Swedish meatballs was drifting over the hall and landing on his blintzes, befouling them with the steam of meat. Well, a terrible crisis ensued, and the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv knew that the question would devolve to, is the steam food? Because the prohibition, of course, is against mixing milk food with meat food. So he had to consult the Council of Torah Sages. And they met and they discussed and they found the test for what is food, and it is this. If a dog will not eat it, it is not food. So, the hotel was commanded to set up the buffet, and a full chafing dish of Swedish meatballs was wheeled from the kitchen. And over this chafing dish, a tent was erected. And from the top of the tent, a tube issued. And then down toward the ground, where the last couple of feet of it were wrapped with wet washcloths, so that the steam would be condensed, and it dripped into a bowl on the floor. And then the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv commanded, "Bring in the dog." And the dog came out of the kitchen doors, sniffed around everywhere. The whole dining room must have smelled to him of food. And soon enough, he wandered over to this bowl of water on the floor. He took a sniff and pursued his sniffing elsewhere. Well, there was great handshaking all around and invitations to come back to the buffet that Saturday, and everybody was thrilled. Of course, what they didn't know was that my friend, the food and beverage manager at that hotel, had put pine salt in the bottom of the chafing dish. So, of course, the dog sniffed it and walked away. But, you know, they make a lot of... you have to go a long way to live around the kosher laws in Israel.
Yeah. You suggest, and suggest is too weak a word, that Yasser Arafat and the Palestinian Authority are epically corrupt and brutal to the point of torture. How do you explain, I'll just refer to it as Yasser Arafat's endurance. Maybe I should be careful about a word like popularity.
Well, you know, Arafat is the key to the status quo. And there are powerful interests on both sides that want the status quo to remain. When you look at the leadership classes of the two societies, every man among them, and they are men, earned his spurs in the conflict. And most of them are running big careers and getting very wealthy in the status quo where the conflict endures.
Now, you suggest this obtains on both sides, for the most part.
There's no question it obtains on both sides, because every item that a Palestinian in the territories must buy comes from a monopoly, which is controlled by Arafat's cronies. And where do these monopolies get all their stuff? From Israel.
You're eloquent in this book on the subject of the shortcomings, if you please, of Yasser Arafat. You are, if anything, even more fulsome on the subject of Ariel Sharon, who you've known for a long time.
I have a history with Sharon. He has been in hot water a dozen times. He has presided over the worst massacre in Israel's history, where their Christian Lebanese allies went into the Sabra and Shatila refugee camps during the war in Lebanon in the early 1980s.
And was upbraided by Parliament for that, by a special commission.
Special National Commission, that's right, said he could never be defense minister again. So, of course, he didn't. He got elected prime minister instead. When I was in the siege of Beirut in 1982 and living in the city, which was ringed by Israeli guns, which pounded the city to smithereens every day, it was horrendous. And I used to tell people, as we miserably drank through another night in the cellar, I used to tell people, well, Sharon is finished after this. The Israelis will string him up by his thumbs. It was God's humor to send me back just in time to witness Sharon's prime ministry. You know, shows you how wrong I can be about the Middle East.
You were a kid who grew up putting coins in little paper slots to plant trees in Israel.
That's right. We had to bring dimes to plant pine trees in Israel.
When the idea of the country was to be a refuge for people who had fled not just the Holocaust, but centuries of oppression.
Right.
Knowing this question's going to invite some email, let me throw it to you anyway. Is there still a need for the State of Israel?
I think there is a need, Scott, and the need is in the breasts of the people, where the fear never goes away. It's almost a national imperative that they fear, because without threats to Jews, without the need to protect Jews, then Zionism itself needs a new rationale. And that's more than most countries can think up for themselves.
Richard Ben Kramer, his new book, How Israel Lost, The Four Questions. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Scott.